Construction meets the world's most popular board game in new Monopoly Construction Edition. Amass or possibly lose great fortunes. Every space on the board is packed with both iconic construction brands and incredible infrastructure projects in this new exciting edition of Monopoly. You'll need to make smart decisions to come out on top. Have you got what it takes to succeed in the world of construction? Search Construction Monopoly to order now.
Welcome to another edition of Reconstruction, the weekly podcast from the Construction Index. Today is Thursday, the 12th of March, 2020, and I'm joined today, as usual. Sorry, I'm David Taylor, editor of the Construction Index magazine, and I'm joined, as usual, today by my colleague Phil Bishop, our online news editor. Good morning, Phil.
Morning, David. We're a day late, aren't we?
We are a day late. Would you like to explain why?
Well, we normally record this Wednesday mornings, and that would have been, we would have recorded it before the Chancellor of the Exchequer stood up to make his budget statement and dropped onto people's devices after he'd finished. So we would have already been out of date for the biggest story of the week. So we thought, we'll wait till after he's been and gone and done it. So we're now talking on Thursday morning.
Ah, indeed. And yes, there's quite a lot to say about that, isn't there? But before we do, I thought we'd just follow on from something we mentioned last week. Do you remember we were talking about
Retentions
and payment arrangements, yes, and stuff like that. And there was a story which broke at the beginning of this week because Costain announced its results for last year. And they're not particularly good, are they? And funnily enough, the whole idea of retentions and the payment arrangements used by the industry were cited as a reason for this. Would you like to explain why?
It wasn't so much the reason for them making a loss last year. It's that they're seeking £100 million equity injection from shareholders. They're issuing some more shares. They need more cash to shore up the balance sheet. And this is, they say, the reason why they need this money from their shareholders, basically, is because they can no longer take advantage of their subcontractors and suppliers in the same way that they used to before. Now, before we go any further, I don't want to suggest that Costain is particularly bad. I mean, it was suspended from the prompt payment code for a period of time, but so were many others.
Yes, indeed.
So Costain is, I would suggest, in broad terms, typical of the Tier 1 contractors. Neither a saint nor a sinner, not especially a bad guy, I don't think, but reasonably typical. And they're saying that now there's growing use of project bank accounts for retentions, which we talked about last week.
This is where money is. This is where money is held by a third party.
They're not sitting on this money. It's now sitting in a third party bank account, which means that they can't spend it while they're sitting on it. And similarly, the prompt payment code, which they've now have been readmitted to, they've sorted out their to a large extent their prompt payment of their suppliers and subcontractors, but those two constraints mean that they don't have all the cash that they used to have, which didn't belong to them, belonged to their suppliers,
yeah,
and their subcontractors. They can't play with that anymore. So they've got to play with their own money now, but they don't have any.
Yeah.
So they're asking for £100 million equity injection from shareholders. So they're admitting that the need, the obligation on them to pay their suppliers on time, and the growing trend for retentions being kept in third-party trust has impacted their cash flow and their ability to, their wiggle room to, for cash flow.
Hmm.
And as I suggested in our article on constructionindex.co.uk, if Costain is admitting to this impact, others of their ilk are almost certainly going to be feeling,
yes,
it in just the same way.
Is that a good thing? Is it a good thing or a bad thing for the industry in general, do you think? I mean, if it's hurting the Tier 1 contractors, is that a bad thing?
I think it's a short-term thing for the Tier 1 contractors, the pain, but it's clearly a good thing for... You'd think it's a good thing for the people lower down, but obviously the people lower down the supply chain need the people at the top of the supply chain to be healthy and liquid and able to pay their bills.
Yeah.
I guess if the Tier 1s are in trouble, we're all in trouble. But I think an awful lot of people down the chain will feel very little sympathy for Costain at this point.
Yeah, I get the impression that Costain and other Tier 1 contractors must feel as if somebody's been going through their pockets and emptying them, because they've been used to having all this loose change sloshing around, haven't they? The fact that it wasn't actually theirs never really impinged upon their consciousness. It was just there, they could use it, and now their pockets are empty.
Yeah, and that's how, you know, again, don't want to pick on Costain, it's just that they're the ones that put their head above the parapet. That is how the industry has traditionally worked for an awful long time, at the expense of subcontractors.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting development. It'll be interesting to see what other Tier 1 contractors say when they also publish their annual results. So that's definitely one to keep an eye on, I reckon. But talking about cash flow and money, I suppose we ought to come on to the obvious topic for this week, which is the budget. Some very interesting, this new chap seems to have an awful lot of money to spend. Where's it all coming from? And where's it going, I suppose, is the most important thing.
Well, it's all the papers are saying this morning, it marks a remarkable U-turn or shift in outlook for a Conservative government after years of monetarism and low tax, low spend, small state, save, prudence, shopkeeper, good fiscal, housewife, housekeeping, and all these things we've been used to hearing of the past 30, 40 years or whatever, since 1977. Now it's spend, like a pools winner.
It's been described by somebody, I can't remember where I saw this, but somebody said it was the highest level of investment in real terms since 1955. That's before we were even born.
Even that long ago. First of all, I mean, let's talk about the big headlines for construction in terms of the numbers. £640 billion over the next 5 years, so by April 2025, for roads, railways, broadband, schools, hospitals, housing and power networks. This is a headline figure. It sounds great, and it's much better than saying that than we're not going to spend anything at all. But you never quite know what's going to go where and whether this money's really going to be spent and how. I don't think we should jump up and down too soon. Some details emerge. £500 million a year for what they call the pothole fund, which is local road maintenance, which is an increase, but it's not that big an increase, and it's still not enough to fix the backlog. The National Road Network in England is getting £27 billion over the next 5 years. So all these, and Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, the new Chancellor, made particular mention of the A303 Stonehenge tunnel was definitely going ahead.
Hooray!
Well, yes, but is it definitely going ahead?
Well, no, exactly.
We talked about the Heathrow ruling the other week.
Yeah, precisely.
The implications of Heathrow. So
a little thing called planning.
There are legal challenges still to happen. There may be a government commitment for these things to happen, but it doesn't mean to say these things are going to happen.
No, that's true.
So while it seems like good news, it's all wait and see. And I'm particularly interested to see when it finally comes out, the National Infrastructure Strategy. This is very confusing. You've got the National Infrastructure Commission, which is a body headed by Sir John Armitt, which is the wise and the great, the experts who set out what the nation's needs are in the long term, which is an attempt to take the politics out of infrastructure planning and come up with an expert consensus of what we need. They produced their document 2 years ago. In their document, the National Infrastructure Commission's document is the National Infrastructure Assessment, and that informs the government's National Infrastructure Strategy. And that was meant to come out last autumn, and with the election and one thing and another, that was put back till the budget date we were supposed to be getting. So it's supposed to be being published yesterday.
Yeah.
And now we're being told it'll become sometime later in the spring. When they say the spring, I assume they mean the spring of 2020, not the spring of some future year. So we hope we're going to see it soon. But there was no explanation as to why that's been delayed, but one can only suspect that they need to paint it a bit greener somehow to head off these Heathrow-related challenges.
Yes.
I don't know how that's going to wash.
No, indeed. The other big spend is in public housing. I think £12.2 billion £6 has been allocated for public housing. And of course, we've got this big problem with a housing shortage in the UK. What do they mean by public housing? Are they talking about council housing? I mean, there was talk about, because of course councils don't build houses anymore, but there was talk about...
Well, some do.
Some do, yeah. But I mean, it's nothing like...
It's mostly housing associations.
Yes. And is that what he means by public housing, do you think?
Yeah.
He's going to throw money at the housing associations.
That's my understanding.
Yeah.
But what I'm not sure is whether this is absolute money that they will actually get these big checks, or whether it is the cost to the Exchequer of allowing them to spend their own money, allowing them to borrow money, but it's underwriting loans and in other forms like that. I'm not equipped and not qualified to talk on that. But, you know, again, the commitment is there for a big social housing programme.
And where's all the money coming from? Because, of course, everybody is saying that he's spending it like it's going out of style, and yet he's got to have money to spend. He can't just spirit it out of thin air.
Well, it only ever comes from the taxpayer, you, me, companies, individuals, smokers, drinkers, and people who do anything that they pay tax on. The usual suspects of petrol and alcohol are being frozen again. But on the subject of fuel, that takes us on to what to me is the big story for construction. What we do know is happening, the absolute most specific, is the end of the tax rebate for red diesel in 2 years' time.
Yes, that is a huge change, isn't it? And it means a huge increase in running costs.
Yes. The Civil Engineering Contractors Association reckon it will cost anywhere between £280 million to £490 million a year to the UK construction industry. And I was surprised it was that small, actually. I thought it might be even more than that, because if you think about the however many billions the construction industry is worth, you think, well, maybe they can swallow, you know, the odd £500 million between them. But no, it will have an impact. I mean, this was trailed a week or two ago that this was going to happen, at which point suddenly all the construction industry trade associations leapt into action. They've been completely blindsided by this. They hadn't seen it coming. They should have seen it coming. There have been enough signals going on in the past few years. It was, in hindsight, pigging obvious that the red diesel rebate couldn't last. But suddenly, you know, about less than a week before Rishi Sunak was delivering his budget, they were writing letters to him saying, oh, you know this plan you've got for the budget, could you not do that, please? As if somehow, 5 days before, he's like, oh, I'll think again then, because...
Well, he did, because the National Farmers Union, according to what he said in Parliament yesterday...
Yeah, he read their letter.
Yeah, exactly, he read their letter, so the farmers will be exempt. But obviously the Construction Plant Hire Association were a bit slow off the mark, I reckon.
I think it does go to show how inferior the construction industry lobby is to the farming lobby. And the construction industry lobby has always been weakened by its fragmentation, and every attempt to consolidate the industry representation has... I mean, we've got Build UK now, which is a very interesting agglomeration of different interests. But anyway, what they did manage to get... I mean, whereas the Construction Plant Hire Association, for example, the people who own the plant and operate the plant, their line, their letter to the Chancellor before the budget was, you can't do this, this is terrible, this will ruin us. The Civil Engineering Contractors Association, who are closely aligned with the plant hire people, took a slightly more pragmatic line, saying, look, this is going to hurt. Can you at least give us a bit of a pause, a bit of time to get things sorted out? Well, it's given them 2 years. Agriculture and the railway sector can use it for the foreseeable. But by April 2022, red diesel will not be able to be used for off-highway construction machine. I perhaps ought to give a bit of background for those who aren't petrol heads or diesel heads. The construction industry has this exemption where off-highway construction machinery, the diesel it uses is taxed at a much, much lower rate, whereas the motorist buying DERV diesel in the forecourt pays a standard rate of tax of nearly 60 pence per litre. This subsidised red diesel, and it's only called red diesel because they put a dye in it, so you can see by looking at it that it's taxed differently and who can use it and who can't use it. Red diesel is taxed at only 11 pence per litre. So it's about 47 pence a litre extra that the motorist pays, or rather 47 pence less that is used on construction machinery. Now, there are certain weird ones like mobile cranes and concrete pumps, which drive on the roads a lot. Well, they're still considered construction machines, so they get them. But the Chancellor makes the point that this is where all the pollution's coming from. 10% or something of the pollution cities comes from the diesel used on construction sites. And the whole drive to, be net zero by 2050 or 2040, whatever it is, we've got to, phase this out. And there are alternatives at the edges, but so long as there is this subsidy for red diesel, the construction industry is being, and plant owners and operators have no incentive to explore and invest in the alternatives.
I wonder if Mr. Sunak has taken into account the added cost of running construction plant in the money he's allocated for all these huge infrastructure projects. I mean, he says he's going to spend so much on roads. Well, can you add a little bit, please, Mr. Sunak, because it's going to cost you more to get the machines on the ground.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. Another interesting story we ran this week about Hyundai, the Korean car manufacturer and construction machinery manufacturer. They reckon that by this April 22, or at least during 2022, they will have diggers powered by hydrogen fuel cells for the mass market. Now, we've had already, JCB have got a battery-powered digger, but they tend to be the small. Battery-powered construction machinery at the moment tends to be the mini diggers, the smaller stuff. I think most of the big hire fleets are starting to buy them in and offer them to people who want them, but it still remains very much a minority of machinery used in the country. But so far, there's been no... It doesn't appear to have been a viable alternative to diesel for the big stuff. That's a standard line. So hydrogen fuel cells is seen as a possible way forward. Hyundai reckon they've cracked it. And they've got the support of the big car company behind them, of course, which is a huge, huge plus for them.
Well, in a way, you can see why Rishi Sunak has made the decision now, because the timing's absolutely right. He can cut that rebate on fuel tax and get some money in from that. And at the same time, in doing so, he can suck up to the environmental lobby by saying, I'm cracking down on all this highly polluting internal combustion engine powered plant and push the industry towards greener technologies. And of course, if they're moving in that direction already, he's got some momentum behind him. So in a way, the timing is perfectly right for an announcement like this.
Yes, I think what it needs, though, is carrot and stick. I mean, for example, he didn't offer any reduction in the rebate, duty on biofuels. Now, biofuels, HOV and things like that, they are taxed at the same rate as diesel and stuff. And it would make sense that if you want to encourage people to use fuels in their existing machinery other than diesel, why not switch the rebate, the incentive to the clean fuels?
Hydro-treated vegetable oil is the term. I'd never heard of that before, but there's some of it out there, apparently, because we were contacted quite quickly, weren't we?
Yes, he was saying that the idea that there's no viable replacement for diesel is not true. We've got, we sell HVO, give me a call and I'll sell you some. I said, how much does it cost? And he said, it's only about 10 or 20% more expensive than red diesel. I'm not sure. Maybe it's the tax that's a large part of it. So if it costs less than diesel as a raw material, but then gets that sort of tax on top of it, it maybe there's a bit of a saving.
I had a quick look at the HMRC website to try and find that out, but as per usual, it's labyrinthine. I understand, and I'm happy to be corrected here, it depends on the usage rather than the actual fuel itself. So if you were to put that in your Volkswagen Golf and drive it up and down the motorway, you'd be taxed on that fuel in the same way.
So if you put it in your digger, you'd pay red diesel tax rates?
I assume so. I couldn't find confirmation of that. But if they're going to phase out that rebate, then it's neither here nor there. But I expect it's more to do with the usage rather than anything else.
In Sweden, 2-3 years ago, they made biofuels tax exempt for motorists as well as commercial use, I think it is. And this led to massive sudden uptake. I mean, it's still not the main fuel, but it's really taken off there. I think more than double the use of hydro-treated vegetable oil, HVO, just in the first year. So clearly the Swedish example shows cut the tax, people will buy it. I think at this point I quote one of my favourite films and say, if you build it, they will come. You know, if you provide the... They're doing it with the... there's something in the news this week about the first all-electric forecourt for what we still call petrol stations, but in future we'll have to call charging stations, I guess.
So rolling those out in Essex, I believe, aren't they? And then they want to go nationwide with them.
I didn't see where it was. It'd be interesting to see how busy they are. I think if I was looking to buy a newspaper or a pint of milk quite quickly, I might choose one of those over my regular Shell.
Coming back very briefly to the fact that the farmers are being given permission to continue using their diesel, I don't understand that at all, because, yes, the NFU were very persuasive and they did persuade the Chancellor to keep the rebate for red diesel for agricultural use, but on what grounds? I can't understand.
No, I can, actually. I mean, apart from the cynical view that there are more Tory farmers than Tory JCB operators, apart from that cynical view, the impetus for clean air is in city centres, and there are a lot of big building sites in city centres spewing out fumes. There's not the same impetus in the middle of a field in Norfolk. You're not damaging the air that, or so many people's lungs in quite the same way as you are in the middle of Norwich or London or something.
True, but I suppose that's just one factor. If you were going to compare farming with construction in terms of its contribution to gross national product, I'm sure that construction would be a far more important industry. Yes, our farmers do a great job. They provide us with some great high-quality food, but not really enough. We still have to import an awful lot. Government policy recently seems to be moving away from farmers as producers of food for the country towards being custodians of the countryside, in which case it probably means they don't need to use their machines quite so much. I don't know.
Well, I think I have the impression that, and here this is another factor in defence of farmers being treated differently or given more leeway, I have the impression that just by, I live in something approximating the countryside, as do you, most of the farm vehicles I see have put in a really good life of service. I mean, there are many of them that are, you know, well more than 20 years old, you know, brand names which haven't existed for decades. And the farmers will rebuild and look after. And these old tractors are still chugging around. I mean, there's some new whizzy machines you see occasionally. But in general, I think the renewal, the lifespan of a farm machine is a lot longer than construction. I mean, these plant hire companies, they might keep an excavator only for 3 years, and you know, it works really, really, really hard, and then you sell it on, turn it over, whatever. It's less onus on certainly the big plant hire companies to over the next three years to have machines which are all, as we're moving towards stage 4, stage 5 EU regs, emission regulations, and powered by non-emitting energy sources as well. What I'm saying is the construction industry is more dynamic, I guess. It will move quicker than agriculture.
Well, let's stay with plant hire for the time being, which brings us on to our final topic for today. The decision by our largest plant hirer, A-Plant, owned by the Ashtead Group, to change its name. Everyone knows who A-Plant is. In fact, Ashtead and A-Plant are pretty interchangeable these days.
Well, I'm not sure these days whether Ashtead as a name is that well known. I think A-Plant is certainly very well known. Those green machines and the A-Plant logo are visible. I think they're the biggest equipment and tool hire player in the construction industry. I think other suppliers may have more, you know, big diggers, or certain other people that may have more powered access boom lifts and scissor lifts. But across the spectrum, from you know, drill bits to diggers, A-Plant I think is number one, and it's a very well known name with a lot of heritage. I think the A-Plant name's been around for, I don't know, 50 years or something, and it's it seems quite a risk. I mean, they've changed the name to Sunbelt Rentals, and that name's been changed. Sunbelt is the name of a company that Ashtead, A-Plant's parent company, bought 30-odd years ago and has had an awful lot of success. In 1990, when they bought Sunbelt, the rental sector in America was in its infancy. It's a very immature market compared to the UK. Most contractors owned their own plant. Now, over that time, I mean, Sunbelt's been has ridden the wave of the growth of rental, and it's still growing, but Sunbelt accounts for something like 90% of group revenues and maybe 95% of profit. I mean, it's a plant is, while it's big, it's pretty tiny compared to what they've got going in the States.
I've got some figures here, actually. In 2018, Sunbelt turned over £3.8 billion. I think that's pounds, not dollars. And in the same year, A-Plant turned over £475 million. So £475 million compared to £3.8 billion, there's a huge difference there. I mean, £475 million turnover for a plant hire firm in the UK is big, which makes them the biggest, but it's dwarfed by Sunbelt.
Well, I've got more up-to-date figures than that, which show, basically, that A-Plant has grown a tiny bit in the past 2 years, whereas Sunbelt has grown by about 10 or 15%, literally almost the past 12 months, year to 31st of January at any rate, this year. £4.3 billion for Sunbelt, and yes, pounds, to £480 million A-Plant. So it's getting on to 10 times the size in the US. And the point is, it's still growing. I mean, they've opened up in Canada.
I mean, your average UK user of plant hire equipment, the A-Plant customer, they're probably going to think that it's like the tail wagging the dog here. There's Sunbelt, which is the US subsidiary of Ashtead Group, coming over here and imposing their identity on A-Plant. Of course, it's not. A-Plant is the tail and Sunbelt is the dog, isn't it?
Originally, but it's a... Sorry, you're right. A-Plant is the tail, yes. It's no longer the front end of the operation.
So why do it? I suppose that's another the question. Why change A-Plant's identity in the UK? It doesn't operate outside the UK as A-Plant.
I have put questions in. I have yet to receive answers. I plan to write something. You've asked me to write something about this subject for the next month's issue of the Construction Index magazine. So I've asked the questions, not had any answer. But I have my assumptions based on what we know of brand changes in elsewhere. A-Plant is no longer just about plant. It exists in all sorts of other sectors in terms of things like music festivals, supplying temporary roadways and portable accommodation and lighting towers and things like that, and markets other than construction. And the word plant outside of construction tends to mean something different. So you could sort of understand why they might want to, outside of the construction industry, come up with a new name where they could find growth in new markets. Because in broad terms, I can't see any player in plant hire taking much more of a market share than A-Plant's got. I mean, there comes a limit to growth. And this is a PLC with shareholders who demand every year companies, not just Ashtead, but it's a function of stock market listed companies, every year they're expected to make bigger profits and spend less money, become more and more profitable. So A-Plant has to look beyond construction to grow, or it has to look to mainland Europe to grow, to new geographic markets, so either new commercial markets or new geographic markets. And the name A-Plant doesn't, I don't think, mean anything in outside of the UK anyway. So plant certainly isn't a term that's used in North America. So there's some sort of sense there. But they've got sub-brands. This is what I don't get about A-Plant. I mean, you've got things like Eve Trackway, or Eve as an hour, and Luxor Lighting Company, and these several other sub-brands, which maybe they could have used those as an alternative for and keep A-Plant as what A-Plant is and use some other. Or maybe just put the name Ashtead to the front and centre. So it's a bit of a risk ditching a brand name with the name recognition and heritage. But, there's new management in. Maybe it's a new start, new makeover. But you normally expect these things to happen when companies are in trouble. An A-Plant, I mean, it's not had quite because of the market conditions, but its numbers have been slightly off in the past couple of years. But it's not a company in trouble. It's a company, broadly speaking, at the top of the game. It's not a Windscale Sellafield thing.
I mean, I can think of one precedent where this happened and it didn't work. It was 10 years ago when SGB, Scaffolding Great Britain, They basically invented what we know as a tube and fitting scaffolding. A huge international name, they were known all over the world, and they were bought by an American company called Harsco Infrastructure.
This is after Molem disappeared, wasn't it?
Yes, Harsco bought them and renamed them Harsco Infrastructure. And of course, Harsco meant nothing to anybody outside of America. So SGB, which was a company that was making huge losses, there was this attempt to try and turn them around, and they rebranded them as Harsco. 4 years later, Harsco was sold to some venture capitalist, I assume. I can't remember the details. But the important thing is that they reverted back to the name SGB because they knew the brand had value. Whether or not the same applies to A-Plant, I don't know. They'll have a huge customer base who probably won't know who Sunbelt is.
No. Well, they're doing an awful lot of brand promotion to make sure that doesn't happen. But I've also been looking at, you mentioned SGB, other companies who in the construction industry who've rebranded and why that was. And four have come to my mind. First, 2001, was when Tilbury Douglas, which is itself was a merger of RM Douglas from the Midlands, and Tilbury, which was originally they ran the pilot ships in the Thames Estuary, but moved into construction, well, dredging and construction. Tilbury Douglas changed its name to Interserve. That was a repositioning of the company away from construction when they became more into facilities management. This is a time when no one wanted to be a construction company because the city didn't like construction, but they loved facilities management. And Interserve is this name that's chosen. Interestingly, there's a big parallel with SGB there. They never changed the name of RMD Quickform, which is still RMD Quickform, having kept its name all these years, it has been, over all the recent years of Interserve's woe and going private and everything, RMD Quickform has been the shining light. It's always made good, healthy profits at good margins, and it's been the cash cow. And Interserve, at one point, looked at selling it to raise the money to sell it, and I don't think they raised the money to save the group, and I don't think they ever managed to persuade anyone to put the same value on it that they had on it, because it was such an important financial component to the organisation. So they kept hold of it, and they still kept hold of it. But so long as they keep it as RMD Quickform, they've got an asset which they can sell for an awful lot of money when they need to, when they want to, if they get out of construction completely, whatever. So by preserving a separate brand gives you a discrete asset which you can use as you see fit. So Interserve rebrand was interesting. Then a few years after that, a company called Renew came along, which was more of your Windscale Sellafield thing. I mean, YJ Lovell, Walter Lilly, these two companies had a history of takeover issues, collapse, re-emergence, whatever. And Renew, the name absolutely is what it sounds like. It's like it's a rebirth. Now, we don't really know the name Renew very well in this country, but it's got a whole load of sub-brands which we might know, like VHE and others. So it's more of a holding company name, which they don't hugely promote, but all the sub brands underneath it are free to operate underneath that. My least favourite rebrand of recent years, they claim it's been a huge success. November 2018, North Midland Construction.
Yes, I know what you're going to say.
it became, and the reason why this became, they had a division called Nomenca, which I think is North Midland Engineer. It's an M&E, Mechanical Engineering Contracting Division of it. It's a successful business, highly regarded. And so North Midland Construction was more of a building firm. And so they wanted to put them under the same brand. And they came up with NMCM, which is a bit clunky to say. But they insist on writing it lowercase, not just big M, N, little MCM, but starting it with a little lowercase n. And for my reactionary perspective, I can't be doing with brand names that insist on being styled in a certain way.
I absolutely agree with you. It's imposing a style on other people. You have to use lowercase.
The thing is, right up to date this year, we've had another new name in the construction industry. And again, a very good reason why a new name emerged, Vistry, V-I-S-T-R-Y, which is the new name of the Bovis Homes Group, having acquired Galliford Try's house building operations. And that's because they want to retain... They can't use the name Galliford Try, but they also acquired Linden Homes, which was Galliford Try's house building arm, and Galliford Try Partnerships. So we now have Vistry Partnerships, but they've kept Linden Homes as a brand and Bovis Homes as a brand. So Vistry is the overbrand. I always think it sounds rather like a leg spin bowler, does Vistry. I'm sure it means something, but I don't know what. But it's perfectly harmless name. I have no problem with that one. And there's an obvious rationale. It is literally rather like Renew. It's a new entity, a new start, new name. Well, for the time being, this is me, Phil Bishop, and David Taylor, signing off for another week's edition of Reconstruction, the Construction Industry Podcast. Thank you for listening. Sorry we're a day late. We'll be back at our normal slot on Wednesday every week from next week. See you then.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news every day, visit theconstructionindex.co.uk. You can find the latest issue of the Construction Index magazine in WH Smith and independent newsagents UK-wide. Use our store locator to find your nearest stockist today at theconstructionindex.co.uk/magazine.